This is Northwest News on KPLU. This next story first appeared on our weekend show Sound Effect. This week's theme was vice.
Imagine if a part of who you are was considered itself to be a vice. You know, not just something immoral, but something that you could overcome if you just worked hard enough at it. Well, that's the situation that a guy named Danny Cords found himself in when he came out as gay to his mom and dad at age 14. So Danny grew up in a very religious home in this kind of semi-rural setting in Renton, and the conversation with his parents about being gay did not go well. So his mom talked to a pastor, and he urged her to put Danny into something called conversion therapy. Now, what conversion therapy is, it's also called reparative therapy, is this program of counseling that's meant to get Danny to overcome this vice of his, the vice, of course, being homosexuality. And the implication of that is that you can turn from gay to straight. So Danny went to this therapy once, sometimes twice a week for 3 years, and he's dealt with the consequences for many years after that. He came into our studio last week to tell us how it started.
So we had to go all the way to Tacoma to find this therapist who sat me down, and one of the first things that he wanted to figure out was whether I was a top or a bottom, which of course are sexual positions. And I was 14. I had no idea. I hadn't had sex, so I didn't know what to say. And then he wanted to figure it out, so it was incredibly uncomfortable.
Why did he want to know that? That's such a strange thing.
It is strange. It was through this theory, and he was very open about this, that if you're a top, then you are obviously on this level of heterosexuality in some form. Like, if you're a bottom, you're completely submissive.
Oh, so if you're a bottom, you're identifying more with a submissive, I see, or kind of, quote, feminized kind of a position.
Exactly.
And then there's no helping you at all? Or?
Well, it wasn't that there was no helping you. It's just that you would require more therapy and that they would have to really work at you, and you might have to go to some of the camps that they had back then or some of the workshops that they had.
What else did the therapy consist of?
It was fear-based. So there was a Bible verse, but basically something, something, you'll become the slums of the earth. And he asked me if I'd ever been to Capitol Hill once outside of a field trip. And he asked me if there were any homeless people there and drug addicts and whatever. And I said, yes. And he's like, well, there you go.
So tell me more about what happened in the sessions when you were given these sort of this homework and ways to try and change your behaviors. What kind of homework were you given?
So the motto of the therapy was all things are possible through Christ. So prayer. For me, it was this, what it meant for me was this pocket cross that came with a card, and you keep it in your pocket. And whenever you had temptations or bad feelings, you were supposed to grab it in your pocket and recite the prayer. You know, the more I think about this and the more I reflect on the pocket cross and what that meant for me, because I had it for years, is you hold it in your hand. And I think I kept my hand probably in my pocket on that cross for most of the day as a way for me to redirect focus to God away from whatever, musical theater. And then there was the rock in your shoe, which is, it was similar to the cross, but it was supposed to be that poking at you so that you didn't have to grab it and hold it and remember it, that it would do it for you, that you would always know, and you'd have that, not quite pain, but discomfort.
What was it supposed to make you think of?
For me as a kid, every day going through conversion therapy, I thought, felt, did all these things that I wasn't supposed to. Every moment was me. The rock in my shoe was trying to change that.
And was it variations on that theme that whole time for how long, like 3 years?
It was actually, so there was a lot of gloom and doom. And then there was a lot of talking about the Bible and talking about me and talking about the way I formed male relationships. But for this one in particular, it was more cognitive behavioral. So take a behavior, get to know what's behind it, and then change it.
The way that this made you think about yourself, did you believe it? Did you sort of buy into it?
The counselor was not very convincing. I was being confirmed in the Lutheran church at the time, and he would misquote the Bible. So I didn't believe him, but what did happen is that I didn't believe in myself anymore. Nothing mattered. And I really did stop caring about school, about friends. I isolated. I got incredibly depressed.
So while all this was going on, I mean, you had a lot of other challenges in your life, too. What was that like? What was your school like? What was your home life like as you're kind of struggling with your own sexual identity?
Sure. Well, I didn't explicitly come out in high school, but people are smart and they figure things out. So I was bullied quite a bit in school. So there would be times when I'd be in the lunchroom and somebody would spit on me and the lunchroom lady would see it and not do anything. Or, you know, I'd be followed, you know, followed home. We'd walk through the horse trails and people would follow me, yell at me, whatever. Or follow me in my car, tailgate me, flash their lights.
In the midst of all that, what was it about the therapy in particular that affected you as opposed to all this other stuff? I mean, you had kind of an us versus them thing in a lot of parts of your life.
Well, when you go to a therapy that becomes your entire life, and then you're bullied and your parents don't support what you want to do or be or who you are, then there isn't much point to living.
How did that progress for you, and your what was your state of mind like?
I eventually came to ends with my parents, and I left home at 17, my senior year of high school, and I was on my own, and it just got worse. As I lived and my life continued, I got more and more depressed. I knew that inside I was this hollow person. And so I, one night, just made a plan to end it and commit suicide.
What do you want to say about that?
Well, I think the most important thing to bring up when talking about suicide attempts is just that, and in relation to therapy, is that who I was taken from me that first week that I was in therapy. When you put it all together and you look at it holistically, you have parents who don't know what to do. They put you in therapy and they question who you are, what you are, and you start to question who you are, what you are, and no one has answers for you, and there's no role models. And then you go to school and people bully you, and you're still receiving therapy, and your parents still don't know what to say, almost at no fault of their own. So it really muddies up where you find your value and where you find your self-worth. And so as I moved out and tried to find my way in the world at 18, 19 years old, it's almost a wonder I didn't do it sooner.
You made it. How did you emerge from that chapter?
Good question. Because I still suffer from brain damage from my attempted suicide. And I think that part of me died, that part of me that didn't value myself, that part of me that questioned myself, that part of me that worried about what somebody or some kind of therapy or therapist thinks about me.
What was it about the therapy that you feel like robbed you of your self-worth?
I mean, it's a lot of things. But mostly this concept of the way you dress, the way you talk, the way you like show tunes is wrong. That if you don't change, that it's your fault. And that somehow all things are possible through Christ, but Christ must not love you enough to do anything about it, even though you are praying constantly.
I guess finally, you've come to terms with your own parents' beliefs about this, and it sounds like you guys have repaired your relationship to a large extent. But what about parents who are going through this now? What would you say to them? What advice would you give to them, to a parent who's confronting this with their own kid?
So I want to first say that my parents are really good people. And I think that is really important to point out, because what they did out of ignorance and they did out of fear. So for parents, when their son comes out of the closet or daughter comes out of the closet, for whatever that closet may be, they need to sit down and take a couple deep breaths and really research and get out into the community. And whatever that means online, I mean, we have the internet, it's wonderful. And to do your homework before you do anything, I mean, it's one of those hard things because there's so much emotion and passion built into this and fear, but you have to look at it holistically. Otherwise, you can't make an informed decision.
Danny Cords was in conversion therapy from the age of 14 to 17, and now he advocates banning conversion therapy for minors. That is still legal in Washington state, and Denny testified before the legislature in favor of a bill that would outlaw it for minors last year. That bill is expected to be reintroduced this session. We have decided to give the last word to Danny and the group that he credits with helping him come into his own, the Seattle Men's Chorus. And here's a bit of Danny singing. It's from the production of I Am Harvey Milk.
You can hear more stories from our show on Vice at kplusoundeffect.org.